And we're live. Are you ready, Mark? You've got your notes. I'd already
I'm
pressed
good.
The button.
Oh, yeah, press the button. Okay, no problem. Hello, everybody. We're live. Hopefully you can see us, and thanks for joining us, those of you on YouTube. And welcome to episode number 6 of WP Cafe, the monthly show where we chat about WordPress to professionals about challenges, solutions, ideas around WordPress development for solo and small WordPress development teams. So if this sounds like you and you want to listen to more of this, then please click the subscribe button on YouTube so you don't miss out on any of our future episodes. We've got some really good ones coming up in the next few months. And if you enjoy the video, then please give us a like below. It helps us to understand that what we're doing is useful. So my name is Mark Wilkinson. I'm today's host, and I'm joined by my co-host, Keith Devon. And in this episode, we're pleased to welcome Alex Denning and Katie Keith. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
It's okay. So we've called this episode Marketing WordPress Products and Services. And marketing is stuff and something that we've really found tricky over the years. And I know there's a lot of other freelancers and small agencies have the same sorts of troubles. So both Alex and Katie have lots of experience in this field and with projects and products. So we're going to have lots of new ideas and solutions and things today. So it's going to be cool. And as always, we're going to be keeping an eye on the comments for your questions. So please, if you have any questions about marketing, WordPress, products and services, then please put them into the top chat on YouTube if you're watching, and we'll try and get to as many as we can. But before we get into the nitty-gritty, I thought it'd be really good if our guests can introduce ourselves. So Katie, can you tell us a bit more about you, a bit about your backstory with WordPress, your marketing, and a bit about Barn too?
Okay, so I'm co-founder and director at Barn2 Plugins. We used to be called Barn2 Media because we started off as a WordPress web design agency building mostly theme-based websites for clients. And then in 2016, we made the switch to selling plugins, and that went really well. And within about 6 months, we were able to stop offering client projects, and we're just focusing on the plugins now. So that's really good.
Excellent. A nice pivot there from one thing to another. That's pretty good. Yeah. Alex, what's your story and what's your experience with WordPress and marketing and Ellipsis, which you're currently on, aren't you?
So I run Ellipsis Marketing, which is a marketing agency for WordPress businesses. So my job is to figure out all the things we're going to talk about. I've been running Ellipsis for a couple of years. Before that, I did the same thing freelance. I've been involved in WordPress for like a long time.
A long time, so are we. Yep. Good, thank you very much. Let's get stuck into some discussions then. So I guess the first thing sounds a bit obvious, but like, define marketing. What do you see as marketing, Katie?
I say that marketing is any activities to build the profile of your products or services, which is about raising awareness and spreading the word more generally, which indirectly will then lead to sales. I distinguish it from sales, which is more about individual customers and closing deals and so on. Marketing is about profile building.
Okay. Anything to add, Alex? Keith?
So in a small business context, you can call whatever you like marketing. So in a like getting product market fit is like product development, but in a small business context, that's a, you can't look at that without looking at, without talking about marketing. So I think anything that is reasonably going to help more people find your product or service and thus increase profits in a small business context, let's call that marketing.
Why not in a larger business context, I wonder?
Because those become more specialized areas where it's someone else's job to do those things.
Okay. So you have a separate team to do those things, you think?
Right. So it becomes like business development at that point, sales at that point.
Okay. Hmm. But raising the profile, I think that's it, yeah. That's kind of the definition. And it's kind of would like you say increasing sales is marketing? Sorry. Like the purpose of it?
If it doesn't work and it doesn't work, then that's still, you probably still call that marketing. It's just not good marketing.
But that's more of a goal or an outcome, whereas the activity is the marketing that brings about that outcome of increasing sales.
Got you. That
it's
makes
getting,
sense.
Isn't it? Like, it's getting your product and service in front of the people who might buy it, that might be interested in buying it, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that part of the equation. So, like, you might be the best plumber in the world, but if you live in a, you know, cave at the bottom of the ocean and no one's ever, like, you're not going to get any business. So it's like, how does that plumber, you know, get in front of people who might need his work? And then, but everything after that, I think the sales and marketing thing is, it's like blurred, isn't it? I mean, and I think they are interlinked. There's no doubt about that, but they are also very different functions. I think the marketing is getting in front of people, and then the sales is actually taking that, like Katie said, it's more of like an individual transaction. So like taking that person who's interacted with your business and converting them into a paying customer. And that's what I think, that's the difference, I think.
But there must be an element of not just getting in front of people, but telling them about your products and services.
Yeah.
Rather than just, you know, because I suppose you could say that marketing is getting a stall at a conference, but then it's not just that, it's telling people about your products and services. And then I guess
that's the difference between like general marketing and good marketing, you know.
Yeah, possibly.
Well, like, yeah. I mean, there's lots of aspects to it, but just like, yeah, you get in front of people and then you need to tell a story, or I don't know. Yeah.
I think one of the things that we can come to later is that this stuff isn't in isolation. It's not a thing to bolt on afterwards or separately. It's a thing that needs to be thought about from the start, and especially in a small business context, in like every context, everything that you're doing. If you don't like marketing, then it's very easy to be like, oh well, I'll just spend 1 hour a week on it and like that'll be that, and like that's how stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, definitely. And in building it into everything, like your product. So say if you've got a free plugin, then part of marketing is, if you have a freemium model, is including links to upgrade and thinking about how to do that in the most appropriate, prominent but non-spammy way and all that. When you're writing documentation, it's about including upgrade links. What if somebody views your documentation when you haven't purchased yet? It's making prominent calls to actions to buy, because it's not just your existing customers that are reading it, if it's available online, of course. So it really does come into everything, like Alex says.
Yeah, I never thought that. That's good.
You can't not do it, can you? I mean, like, there's just, I mean, even if people think that they aren't doing any marketing, if you have a business and you have customers, you have done some marketing, haven't you? I mean, there's no other way, whether it was deliberate or not. You know, it's like...
If people say they don't do it, they're probably lying.
They just don't know they're doing it.
Or they just don't realize,
Well, even mouth marketing is marketing, isn't it? Because by pleasing a customer so that they recommend you, that is indirect marketing. Yeah.
Exactly. Even talking to your friends and family, you know, that's a form of marketing. That's like a form of networking, which is a form of marketing. So like everyone has to be doing it, whether they're kind of aware or not.
Okay, let's move on. That's good. I think I've got an understanding of it. So the next bit is about like the channels of marketing and what marketing channels can you use. So firstly, are there any specific channels that work really well in WordPress? Something that's like WordPress specific. Maybe it's products, maybe it's services, maybe it's both. Any thoughts on that, Alex? What's the channel?
I just want to connect the previous question to this one.
Okay.
Before I answer the question. Mm-hmm. Talking about like, we in the first 5 minutes we established marketing is indispensable and also everything, right? And then like we get onto like, well, what do I do? The key prerequisite is product market fit. So, and that phrase works for services as well. You probably shouldn't think about this question unless you've figured that bit out. Have you made sure you built something that people actually want and or need? Ideally both.
Okay, let's wind back then before we get into channels. How do we do that? How do you establish if you have product market fit?
The bit for knowing if you have it, is easy enough. The best way of phrasing that that I heard was that you know you have it because it hits you in the face. People keep wanting your thing, and
but that's that. Presumably, that's when you already made it. Are we not? Yeah. Are we not so talking about when you're thinking of making something?
In terms of actually getting it, that's more like a product development question. Yeah, I think it's okay. Probably a better place to answer that than I am.
Yeah.
So, Katie, you've got lots of plugins, haven't you, on your that you sell? We've got one. We bought one off it, which is good. Which is the UVAT one, I think it is. So, how do you know that there was a market for those before you decided to build them?
Our first two plugins, one of them came from a client because we were already a web design company. So a client wanted to list his blog post in a searchable table on the front end. So because he had hundreds and hundreds of posts, so he wanted people to be able to search them. And so we then built that into a plugin and released it. And then we started listening to customers, because once you've got some customers, they start asking for things, constant feature requests. And it was very, very clear that people wanted to list custom post types and WooCommerce products. So even though this client only wanted blog posts, just releasing that product opened the doors to custom post types and WooCommerce products. So now our top two selling plugins are Post Table Pro, which lists custom post types in a table, which people use for document libraries, member directories, audio galleries, all sorts of things, and WooCommerce product table, which you use to create kind of quick order forms in WooCommerce with the products listed in a table. So because of that one client project, which was in late 2015, I think, we have two very successful plugins that are making tens of thousands of dollars every month, all because of that one client. So it's amazing how things can grow. You just do one little thing, get it in the public domain, and then you listen and you get that information that comes to you. And our other early product was WooCommerce Protected Categories. And WooCommerce.com has an ideas forum. And so we looked on the forum and we just basically built the most popular idea. And that was a way to protect, password protect categories within WooCommerce to create, I don't know, a wholesale area or whatever, or a separate area for each customer. So we just did what was highly ranked on that forum, and that's still available today if people are looking for ideas. That's so you can see what people want that isn't likely to be picked up as an official extension for whatever reason.
Cool. Keith?
Yeah, I was just wondering, Katie, whenever you first decided to release that plugin, where did you release it? How did you release it? Was it on the, like, what was your marketing strategy there? Was it a bit of a kind of just stick it up and hope for the best? And where did you put it? Like, how did that take off from just a plugin from a client to something that's generating? How do you get your first customers so you started generating that feedback loop?
Well, we were very lucky because we were already a WordPress agency. We had quite good domain authority, or PageRank it was called then, wasn't it? And so we already had quite good SEO with WordPress-related keywords. And the initial plugins that we developed were all very, very niche, like WooCommerce Password Protected Categories. There's competition now, but back then there was nothing ranking for that term because it was a gap in the market back then. So I have a marketing background myself. It's my husband that's the developer, who runs the technical side of the company. So I wrote some long form blog posts about how to create password protected categories in WooCommerce, and they immediately leapt to number one of Google. Mm-hmm. And it was literally, I think, about 3 or 4 days before we got our first sale, which was so exciting. We didn't use a marketplace like ThemeForest, like Codecanyon or whatever. We decided because it was so niche and we had our own website, which had good SEO, we'll just do it ourselves and see how it goes. So we stuck this product on, installed easy digital downloads, and it sold, which was amazing. So I guess it's harder if you're not already in business at all within the WordPress sphere.
Yeah.
You haven't got a starting point then.
Yeah.
Was that the product that you got off the ideas forum?
Yeah, that was that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that was the one. Right. Yeah. So you knew there was people wanting that product. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I never thought of that. Okay, that's cool. So I suppose then going back to channels, Katie, what channels do you use now then for those to market your plugins?
Well, we've got five or six important channels, but the most important one right from day one has been content marketing, starting off with that post I wrote about protected categories. I used to have quite a haphazard approach to content marketing. I'd write, I like writing and I'm good at it, and I'd write lots of articles. I just sort of think, what's another possible use case for our plugin, and write about that. So like with Post Table Pro, the custom post type list one, I thought, oh yeah, people might want to list documents in this. So I wrote an article, how to create a document library in WordPress, and that has been one of our top selling articles for 4 years now. And but it was random. So I wrote loads of posts that didn't make any sales. And I've been working for Alex for about 3 years now, largely to reduce that randomness. We've talked about quite a few times together about how to get data before we produce the posts. Yeah. And part of that's analyzing how our existing posts have performed and using that to learn and guide future posts and make improvements. And other parts of that is coming up with new keyword ideas that we don't know if they'll sell yet, but we think they will, and getting the data behind that. And Alex is probably a good person to talk about that process of getting the data.
Yeah. I was going to say, we'll come to Alex in a second then about that. But so the idea of the content marketing is that you write an article that ranks well, or ranks well for a specific keyword that people are trying to search for, and then you cross sell your product on that article. Is that the way it works, to try and, you know, you've read this and you want to do it, and then here's the solution? That's the premise.
Solution. So, and it, because with your sales pages, your product pages, they're generally quite short, of course, because it's a completely different format. Whereas with tutorials and blog posts, you can really get into that depth, which helps real users because it's effectively documentation. And it also helps with your SEO because long form content ranks much more easily. So that really helps. And you can put a lot more information in there to help people, in which your product is the natural conclusion.
Cool. That's good. So come to Alex then. So you mentioned about getting data beforehand. How do you go about that then, Alex?
So the key thing is you're solving a problem for someone. So say I want to, a document library post is a great example. So say I want to create a library of documents in WordPress. I'm going to search for something in order to do that. I might search, for example, WordPress document library.
Yep.
Which, as it happens, is a thing that 400 people a month search. I'm then going to click on what I think is the most relevant result. Bantu happens to rank number two for that. Yep. And I come to this post, how to create a WordPress document library. It shows me very quickly at the start, I'm going to learn how to do this. It tells me I need the plugin, tells me all the options, how to set it up. Easy peasy. That solves my problem. I'm now going to click to buy the plugin.
Yep, makes sense. How did you know that there are 400 people, was it, that were searching for that?
So that comes from keyword research.
Okay. Do you want to talk a bit about that and what that is?
Yep. So that's just looking for search terms that people have in large numbers. So anything over sort of 50 searches a month is a good candidate. If you have a really niche plugin, then maybe you'd go lower than that. Okay. You know you're going to be the solution. And we're just looking for stuff people are searching for where you can solve the problem.
So how do you get that number? Is that something that Google provides on something?
So
or?
It's where we get into SEO software. We could spend a whole hour talking about SEO software.
So it's just a piece of software that you can buy, is it, or you can subscribe
to?
So
you can use Google Keyword Planner, which is built into the AdWords. I haven't used that for years. That may be wrong now.
It's got worse and worse in my experience, Keyword Planner. Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it anyway. No. So that's what I'm doing, which is free. We use a handful of tools for it. Basically, you put in your keyword and it surfaces that specific search term, related keywords. If you do it for years, you are able to figure out the kind of thing people might search for. So like for this specific search term, 400 people a month searching for WordPress document library, but if we flip the keyword around to document library WordPress, it's only 40. So you kind of learn what that looks like over time. We use a bunch of tools. Ahrefs is great. We use one called Keyword Finder, which is cheaper but good for keyword research.
And we use SEMrush a bit occasionally.
SEMrush is similar to Ahrefs.
Yeah.
Basically, you spend a small fortune on these tools, and then you can get the answers.
Yeah. What we tend to do is like dip in and out of SEMrush. So we like get it for a month, get as much data as we can out of it, and then stop the subscription.
If you just want
data for a while and then come back to it.
Research, I would go for Keyword Finder, which is kwfinder.com.
Okay.
It's really solid just for keyword research.
Cool.
Okay. And then like over time you can do other stuff. So like you might search for the document library stuff, and then it would surface related keywords. Maybe those are a good idea for the post. Maybe you can add that as a secondary keyword to your existing post. Maybe there are other ideas perhaps for product development there. Like people want to know how to do that with PDFs, how to do that with whatever. And then you can just start surfacing all this stuff, and you get a snowball of endless. Well, not quite, probably not totally endless, but it just self generates more things to do.
Yeah.
More problems to solve. That's the key thing, though. You're solving the problem. You're doing a great job of it. Google rewards that.
Yeah. Cool. There's a question coming from Tony on the chat here. He says, I'm in a similar position. I'm building a feature for a client and they want to make it a plugin. So should I feel bad that I'm effectively charging him for plugin development that I'll hopefully benefit from? So I guess back to your one, Katie, did you charge the client to build the plugin that you then sell, or did you kind of sell that to the client as the price you now sell it to customers and take the hit on development? Or did they pay for the development of that plugin? That's kind of what he's asking.
He charged the client for the plugin that he needed on his site, which was everything hard-coded, nothing, no settings page, none of that. So in order to release it, we had to do a lot more work, adding short code options, for example, a settings page, all of that. So, and we then gave the client a free license to that. So he got a better product because we had then taken it to the next level. And I expect it's the same for, was it Tony? That Tony what he said, sells would not be exactly the same thing that he built for the client. So I don't think that's bad or unethical. And I've been open with my client about that. And he knows how it's led to these other ideas and evolved and...
He's got a better product now than you built him to start with because of that process, I guess, hasn't he? Yeah, so it's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't think you ever need to be guilty about asking for money for solving someone's problem. Like, nobody has to pay you if they don't want to. We could talk about that forever. That's just a personal personal opinion of mine. It's just like, I don't know. You solved that original client's problem. They paid you the value that they saw to do that, and then... Yeah, you can kind of do what you want after that, presumably. I don't know. I don't think we need to feel guilty about making money. I think there's certainly in the WordPress world, I think because of the whole open source nature of it, I think there's a bit of guilt when it comes to selling plugins because there's so many free ones, etc. I just think we need to get rid of that entirely. Mark and I are on that path. So trying to figure out ways to like sell our kind of buy products and, you know, things like that. And we try to give away a lot for free as well, like things like this, you know, but I don't think we need to feel guilty.
So just to wrap up on channels, something that suddenly struck me there is that it relies a lot on SEO, does that strategy, on content marketing. Mm-hmm. So what happens if Google like just changes its algorithm and then you'd bomb in the search rankings? Are there any other channels that you use as well that might be a little bit of a backup for that? Or is that not a problem essentially, and you just that's your main channel and that's what you're going to stick to and work on it? Katie?
That's one channel, which probably brings the majority of our sales, but we do have others. I mean, the thing with SEO is that I think people get a bit too caught up in the exact algorithm details, and or what they believe them to be. Whereas if you just do good long form content that the user genuinely finds useful, then you it doesn't tend to affect you that dramatically. We've never had a big sort of impact from an algorithm change because we're not trying to tweak it to the tiniest detail in that way, which some more dodgy types might do.
Yeah, yeah.
But we do have other channels, like our affiliate program. We have affiliates. Most of them don't really generate sales, but we have some very good high profile WordPress blogs mainly that are writing about our plugins regularly. Okay. And
That's cool.
So I think, yeah, in the last 3 months, they've generated something like $20,000 worth of sales for us. And that's well, largely through content marketing, but on their sites, their own content marketing using our plugins. So if our site dropped out of Google, at least the affiliates would still be driving content our way, driving traffic our way. Similarly, guest posts, which we might provide for high-profile WordPress sites about our plugins, tutorials on other sites. So again, it just spreads the risk a bit.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I don't think it's probably something to worry about, is it? I'm not sure it's going to happen, but it's just something to think about. Keith, you want to come in?
Yeah, no, just on that, the algorithm changes point there. I read something. There's a guy, Brian Dean, who I follow. Alex is probably aware of him. He's like a big SEO guy. He posted something recently answering the same question. Someone asked him if he was worried about algorithm changes, and he says he celebrates every time he knows there's an algorithm change coming because it usually means his traffic's going to go up, because he writes super useful long form content that just provides loads of value, and that is what Google wants to reward. So he knows that like they're trying to optimize for him. Basically, so he's always happy to see algorithm changes. And I think if you're doing things with your end user in mind, like giving them as much value as you can through those blog posts and all that content, then you're probably not gonna you might suffer small little dips, and that does happen. Like the things get a bit turbulent sometimes in the SEO world, but like in long term, I think you're gonna be okay.
Yeah, cool. Let's move on from channels, I think. We're amazingly nearly halfway through. It always time absolutely flies easily. So let's move to a question that I know is something that a lot of people ask and struggle with, working out what to spend on marketing. So, you know, how much should you as a business, we're a small team, how much do you think is a good marketing budget? Maybe as a percentage of, I don't know, revenue or turnover or profit or whatever, what do you think we should be spending, or agencies or freelancers should be spending on marketing, Alex?
I can't answer that. It's up to you.
No recommendations at all.
Well, so there's a bunch of variables. I guess we can go through them. What are your priorities would be a good question to start with. So if the answer is I have $1 million of venture funding and I need to have monthly revenue growth of 25% a month every month for the next 18 months to survive, then we'd have a very different conversation to I'm making £500 a month and I want to invest that for the long term of the business, to say I'm making £2,000 a month, it's my only source of income, how can I just move the needle a little bit? Mm. So there's the parameters question, like, what are you trying to do? From there, like, what is your plan? What does your strategy look like? So that tends to be the first problem that we solve for people. Look for low hanging fruit opportunities. Like, can you mess around with your pricing? Oftentimes that can be hugely impactful. Can you do stuff with your copy, conversion rate, positioning? So those things aren't necessarily expensive. You can hire someone to do them. You can do them yourself. You can probably, if you at least have some good advice on what to do, you can probably get it like 50 to 75% of the way there yourself with some of these things. And then it gets like how long is a piece of string from there. Okay. If you want to invest in SEO content for multiple years, then that is expensive. But you might have high confidence that this is the thing for you and it's going to work out as an investment. That's like a personal risk decision, though, rather than like you should always spend 20% of your revenue on marketing. It's up to you.
Yep. Okay. Fair enough. Any tips, Kate? Anything to add? Anything you want to say about like marketing budget?
I'd say you start with whatever you can afford. Try different channels, and the key thing is to monitor them and measure the return on investment from each channel. So with the content marketing, you don't just do it randomly. You put UTM codes in the URLs that point from the blog post to your product pages, so that then Google will tell you when those posts have generated sales, for example. So you would then be tracking, I invested in a copywriter or whatever to produce this article, has it generated sales? And then that helps you make more informed decisions. So you take that initial risk of putting money into marketing, but then you can actually check, is it paying for itself and more, which is obviously the point of marketing. With traditional marketing, things like leaflet drops or whatever, that was really difficult, shelter adverts and things like that. But the wonderful thing about online marketing is that you really can track it. So that really helps. And so don't just keep throwing money, whatever that amount of money is, measure it, and then you know it's worth it.
So you probably want...
Sorry, go on, Alex. Go on.
So to start with, you probably want like 1 to 3 channels.
Okay.
And you want to keep that number as small as you can. Mm. Once you figure out something works, you want to just focus on that. And probably bin the other stuff until you've kind of maxed out that channel.
Yep.
I have a good post on our blog about this, about marketing channels. It's the Ellipsis website, which is getellipsis.com/blog. That's all of that. But small, as few as possible, doing as much of them as you can is very efficient. Sure. That's a great way of doing it. And as Katie said, you can measure everything. So... Right.
So if you can't measure it, then don't do it. Is that the message?
Not necessarily.
Okay. But it's the goal.
In general,
you really want to be able to measure it.
I'm sure that if we thought about it for a minute, we could think of like some ways of doing things which are objectively good, but we can't measure. In general, though, measurement is good.
Okay. Yeah. And just you mentioned the UTM code, Katie, there. Can you just explain what that is? People might not know.
I'm going to bounce that to Alex because he set all up.
Okay. Sorry, go on then.
So Google has this thing called the campaign URL builder. And if you Google campaign URL builder, you will find it. What you can do is append a bunch of info to any link so that when someone clicks on that link, you'll be able to see in your Google Analytics, provided they're not blocking Google Analytics, what goals or e-commerce actions someone has taken as a result of that link. So you see it on lots of like UTM source equals blah, blah, blah. So for content marketing, you probably want to put as your as one of your unique parameters the post slug or the post title. And that let you see, say, for content on a post-by-post basis, okay, this post has generated me this many sales, this one's generated this many sales, etc. So a really precise tracking, you can then use that information to do more of the stuff that works, fewer of the things that haven't worked.
Makes sense. I've seen those around the web, and I kind of thought there was something to do with tracking, but I must admit I never fully understood what they actually were doing.
Are they Google-specific? Is that a Google... invention, the UTM code, or is that like a standard? I'm not sure.
I don't know where they originated.
No, I'm not sure.
I guess it doesn't matter in that they're like pub.
Yeah.
Anyone, it's like a standard that anyone could use, I guess.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's cool.
Interesting. Cool. Okay, that's good. Thank you for that. So moving on to the next bit then. I'll probably ask Katie first. So should you do it yourself or should you work with a marketing partner? Because I think you've done both. Obviously, you probably started out, you said you were writing content, and then you probably, you know, helped use someone to help and move that into a more strategic direction. What would you recommend? Would you recommend starting yourself, or would you recommend starting with someone that knows more about it to straight away?
It depends on the structure of your company. We're very lucky at Barn 2 because my husband is a developer and I have a marketing background. And so between the two of us, to get started, we kind of had all the skills we needed as a company. And then once we knew the products would be successful, that's when we started working with Ellipsis and just partly for the extra expertise, but also about capacity so that I could focus on other areas of business development. So that's a different situation to the very typical circumstance of a lone developer who is starting out on their own, or perhaps two developers working together, but they're not marketers. So if in that situation, I would expect that they'd probably want to bring in expertise at an earlier stage than what we did. Because I know lots of developers who own their whole company and they have learned business and are doing a great job and are very successful, but it's a distraction.
Sounds so familiar.
They may or may not, they may enjoy doing that. It may not be what they want to do, and that's fine. But it is essential. Like I think Alex said earlier, you can't not do marketing. It's a part of everything. And if that's not what you want to do, you can't just say, well, I'll just do the bit I enjoy, which is the coding, because you're not going to be successful then. You need that expertise, whether it's in-house or not.
Yeah, that's a good point. And was there like a tipping point that you thought, right, now's the time, we need the expertise coming in? Was there something that triggered that, or was it just like gut feeling, or
meeting Alex at a web? We were in a speed networking, I think, group. And he was like, oh, hi, I'm Alex. I specialize in marketing for WordPress theme and plugin companies. I was like, oh, that's what I need. So it wasn't that I'd like been looking for that. I didn't know that such a person existed that specialized in marketing for WordPress. So it just made sense. So we started off with a sort of an audit and a strategy, and that was a good way to gauge their work, actually, and see what the recommendations were. And then I hired them on an ongoing basis to perform particular tasks, some of which I'd been doing myself but wanted to take a step back from, and others which we weren't really doing at all at that time.
He obviously marketed himself very well.
I think that's a great example.
It was a group chat about marketing, so that was a good place for Alex to be, I think.
It's killer. Alex has some killer positioning. He's like, if you think it, well, how did we come? We came up with the topic of this show, and who's the first person we thought of, Mark?
Yeah.
Like, who are we going to get on a WordPress marketing show? I wonder. It's like, Alex, he's the guy. So it's like, that's what positioning does for you.
That's true. Yeah. Cool. Okay, probably one for Alex then. He's like, what should we expect, or someone expect, from a marketing engagement with a marketing partner? You know, what are they going to get out of that, I guess? What are the deliverables that they might get, and what's that look like?
It depends what you hire them for.
And is that their decision, or is that something that you would help them come to that conclusion? We need help with X, not
Y. So we can get a little bit meta with stuff. So the first bit of work we do with basically everyone, which Katie just mentioned, is our marketing audit and strategy work. We have that productized as a service because it basically everyone has the same problem. It's, I don't know where to focus. I need help figuring out what to do next. I'd like some sort of way of working with you for a bit without a giant commitment. Maybe I can do some of the stuff you recommend myself. Maybe you can do it for me. So we figure it out for people to start with. And what we do is we do that in the context of, where do you think you want to go next?
Okay.
So sometimes it's, I'm working on this myself and I just want a bit of direction to make sure the the scarce resources I have to spend on this are spent effectively is a common one. Maybe it's, I think I'd like to work with you, but I'm not sure what objectively is a good idea. Maybe it's like, I have 20 people, and we just want some specific expertise in the WordPress space. That's a new problem for us of like bigger businesses coming into WordPress, and then going like, how on earth does any of this work? It's free. What is that? How do I make money? That's a new problem this year for us to work on.
Yep.
So we go into that bunch of parameters and then can recommend stuff based on those. So it's up to the client on like risk appetite, budget, that kind of thing. In terms of like what to expect, so if you do some strategy work, you want easy wins to implement immediately, as well as we tend to look in the next 12 to 18 months of things to do. So that's a good starting point if you're not sure. If you then want to go, if you then like do that and decide you want to go all in on SEO content, then that's a different set of questions about what to expect. Obviously, you would expect SEO content which delivers results in line with expectations, possibilities, etc. If you want to do conversion rate work, like then expect increased conversion rate. You want to move the needle on like the specific thing you're looking at, basically.
But what if I don't know what that is? So I don't know which bit is the right thing to do. I want someone to come in and say, you know, is that something that a marketing partner will do? Will come in and say, right, Mark, this bit is what you need to focus on the marketing.
That's how you get to that strategy work, and that's why we have it productized, because exactly how you phrased it is what everyone says to me.
Right. Yeah. I can imagine that's a key common question, definitely. So Katie, was it what you expected then when you started working with Alex, or was it, and obviously you're really enjoying it and you're liking it, but was it different to what you thought it would be? Is it the same? Is there anything that you want to comment on that?
I think it's the same. Yeah. Cause the initial audit outlined where they thought the areas for improvement were, and then we've gone through those. We've made a lot of changes over time, because some things obviously work, others don't work so well. So for example, they've always taken care of our affiliates and our guest posting. With the affiliates, it's just the work to communicate with them and manage them and things like that. And they used to do a lot of work with all our affiliates, trying to nurture them and encourage them. And that's quite a lot of manual work. Mm. And then over time, we realized that actually we can profile which affiliates are worth investing in nurturing, and we know what sorts of affiliates are likely to be successful and generate significant sales for us and therefore be worth spending that time on. And so we've kind of adjusted our services with Ellipsis based on the putting on in the most time into the ones that have that potential and not doing any manual work on the other ones. And the same with guest posting, really. We've learned more and more about what works and what doesn't. So that is what I would have expected, because all marketing is about learning and monitoring over time.
Yeah, makes sense. Cool. So probably a bit of a controversial one, actually, then. Should marketing fees be performance based? So if I'm hiring someone to market my products, if I don't get any more sales from it, should I have to pay them or not? Or is that something that's unreasonable? What do you think, Katie?
I think no, because it's not, the quality of the marketing is not the only thing that affects the number of sales. Your website is terrible, if your product is rubbish and you get poor reviews, if the conversion rate optimization is really poor so that people can't find the checkout, there's lots of things that might stop people from making the sale, even if the marketing is really good. So it's not really fair to put it all on the marketer. And also, you're not going to get anybody any good to agree to that. That's like a double glazing salesman or something. It might be commission only. You're not going to find a good marketer to actually agree to that, because why would they? So you're paying a professional for a professional service. But like I said earlier, you do need to hold them accountable, track the impact of their work and changes. And if you're not seeing any results, then obviously you should stop within a reasonable period.
Okay, cool.
So there's Alex, pretty, any... like, there is a risk then, obviously, with choosing a partner. I guess it was we know how you met Alex. I guess a question to either of you, like, if someone is looking for a marketing partner, what should they look for in that partner? Like, how do they assess whether this person or firm is going to be any good and is going to be appropriate for them? Like, have you got any advice on that? Alex first, maybe.
So to answer that and the previous question, I did take on work like that when I was starting out. Yep. And it was because I couldn't convince the client that I could do it. There was, yeah. So that question comes from a place of like lack of confidence and trust. So we now solve that problem by starting off with the audit stuff, the strategy stuff, to work out what to do, which gives much higher confidence. And then I can point to our track record as this, we're confident that we can do it. We're not going to recommend it if we can't. Off we go. When I was like unproven and didn't have that, I would have considered it. Now I like won't.
Do you not ever think though, Alex, you might like be potentially leaving some money on the table by not doing that?
Right.
Like...
So I say won't. The caveat is occasionally it can make sense.
Yeah.
So like I worked with I worked on Coblox.
Yeah.
With Rich and Jeffrey. Because they were just getting started and I thought it was really exciting. Mm. And it made sense to, when I started working, we thought we were like a long way out from making revenue, but it looked like an exciting opportunity to be involved in. Obviously I ended up selling to GoDaddy. So, that was vindicated.
Yeah.
Those kinds of situations are very rare though. Okay. That only makes sense where someone's just getting started and you can have potentially have a huge impact.
Right.
Otherwise I'm quite happy having showing that we can do ongoing value and doing that.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
So sorry, that's kind of, so I said I'll answer both questions. That did not do that. So what to look for? So a track record is important. For WordPress specifically, WordPress is weird. Stuff doesn't work that you would think works. So WordPress specific expertise is very helpful. Happily, we sit at the intersection of both of those, which is good. You need to be able to get on with them. You need to trust their recommendations. Do they inspire confidence? If you can push them around, that's probably bad.
Yeah.
Like they need to have, if you want strategy out of someone, then they need to be able to push back in specific areas of their expertise rather than just do what you want, because in theory you're hiring them because they know better than they have more expertise on that area. Stuff like that to look out for.
Cool. So if they're just yes men or yes people, and I guess, you know, that might be a sign that they're just telling you what you want rather than what you need.
But that could be a thing that you, if you decide I want to do like whatever, I want to do this type of retargeting ads, then hiring someone to do retargeting ads who is specialized in that, who will just do what you want, is great, and that will be cheaper than hiring someone to like strategize for you and then do that. So there's more nuance.
Sense. Okay. We're getting close. We've only got 10 minutes left. There's been a few questions come in. So the electric co company, that's Mark, I think. Yeah, hi, Mark said. Could I ask Katie, did she pivot from web agency to plugins overnight, or was it a gradual transition?
Well, we continued looking after our clients, what we still do actually, but we continue taking on new web design projects alongside selling plugins for probably 6 months, where we, again, we're lucky because we have my husband Andy, who is the developer, and me as running the business. So I was already managing a team of freelance developers to build the projects we were working on. So Andy stopped working on any client work. So he didn't really have a gradual transition. He just focused on the plugins, whereas I kept the income coming in from the projects while the income from the plugins caught up. And then to free me up for the marketing and business development of the plugins, after about 6 months, we stopped taking on new clients. But we actually still have about 40 clients that whose websites we designed years ago that we still host and maintain. We're thinking at the moment about what to do about that, because it's not really part of our core business in any sense. But we do have 40 clients still. But it's a long time since we took on anything new. But yeah, it was a gradual transition, because you can't just stop all your income coming in while you start selling products. You do need a transition. While minimizing the distractions from the project work, of course. So it was pretty balanced during that period.
Well, obviously, you did make a decision at some point to change the website and to pivot from media to plugins. Was there a point where that was like a financial thing? You know, like, we're making monthly revenue that's covering costs on plugins, so we can just literally stop talking about a website. So was that a gradual thing? I don't know. There must have been a point where you made that decision to switch things over, I guess, on the website side of things.
Yeah, well, we weren't very. It was quite scary accepting that all our eggs are in one basket. And we're just a plugin company now, so it was kind of one step at a time. So initially we had our web design menu and a plugins menu, and they'd run alongside each other. And then we started to kind of hide the web design menu but keep it in the background so we could refer clients to it to reassure that we were the sort of company they thought, and we redid the homepage. But it was really slow, and it was quite a long time before we had the confidence to completely lose that messaging and that we offer web design services at all.
It's
scary.
It is quite scary. It's a confidence thing, isn't it? You never want to make that big pivot just in case. You know, we've had that with things, haven't we? It's like, do we do that or not? Because if it doesn't work, then can you go back? And it's quite difficult.
But in terms of financials, we waited until it was about the same revenue. I think we were making, I don't know, £10,000 or so a month off the client business. So we waited until the plugins were making about that, and then we have that confidence. And of course, once you've got subscription renewals from your plugins, it's a bit like the hosting income you'd get from your clients, that you have got some recurring revenue makes it a little bit less scary.
There's nothing like cash in a bank to give you a bit of confidence. That's good. Right, we're nearly finished, but I want to ask a couple more questions. The last question, if you like. What's the one thing that someone could do today to level up their marketing? I mean, you mentioned low-hanging fruit there, Alex. Is there like one thing that you just think, you've got to do this? Everyone's just got to do this today if you want to get better at marketing. We'll go to you, Alex, first.
Great question, which I should have an answer to. So probably the most common problem that we see with developer-led WordPress products is the positioning. People very often describe functionality rather than value or outcomes. The names of some of the Bantu plugins are a good example of like what that journey looks like. So it'd be like having functionality name with WooCommerce opens the door to like people searching for that keyword.
But we have very boring names.
they're good for SEO. But once you get to the sales page, it's all about the value that creates and what that lets you do. It's not as simple as just like scrapping one and having the other, which I think a lot of the time it's talked about. Like, you must talk about outcomes as though it's like just flick the switch. talking about functionality gives you the permission to talk about outcomes, value you can create, and then you can back that up also with case studies, with testimonials, with social proof, with examples. So if you want one thing to do, have a look at that. How are your customers talking about your product? What problems are they saying that they're solving? And just make sure your sales page has all that on it.
Good. Thanks. Good advice. Anything to add that, Katie?
My one thing, I think, is to sit down and write something. Think about what your current customers ask about the most, which you can do, but isn't maybe that clear. Because why are they asking you if it's clear? And just write a long article about that. Ideally do some keyword research to back that up, but the main thing is just to get something out there, make it long, detailed and helpful, and that can make a big difference.
Good advice, yeah, thank you. And last but not least, are there any resources that you guys use for marketing? Favourite books, podcasts, newsletters, anything that our audience should perhaps subscribe to, purchase or read that you think might be useful for them? Even Keith, if you've got one, you can...
I do. I'll jump in first then. I mentioned earlier, if you're interested in search engine optimization, check out the Backlinko blog by Brian Dean. He writes seriously in-depth guides on a whole range of SEO related topics. So I definitely check him out. That would be my number one tip.
Is that backlink.io?
Backlinko as .com?
Yeah, let's do a little search.
I'm going to deviate slightly. I think that site is very good, but it's very mainstream. And if you do, especially SEO, if you follow the advice that's on there, you will get like up to the same results as everyone else, which isn't going to cut it. I think for the kind of content we talked about today, I think solving a problem around a specific use case and keyword is the way to go. I actually wouldn't worry too much about the SEO stuff.
Yeah.
As long as you've got a good target keyword and then you actually show how to solve that problem, that's good. You can worry about the fancy SEO stuff in a year's time.
Cool.
I read many books. There are no good books on marketing WordPress products. I'll have to write one.
Yep. I was going to say, there you go. There's your gap in the market.
I would. I'd recommend Traction. Great book. That's a great one.
Where's your copy, Katie? Come on, let's go there somewhere.
I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
It's called Traction by Gabriel Weinberg and Justin Mears. Gabriel Weinberg's the DuckDuckGo guy.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
If you want like 100 ideas on ways to manipulate people, read Influence by Robert Cialdini. This was written in the 80s. And it's very interesting because it's all true. And it's an academic who says that he was being manipulated too much. And so he set out to be like, otherwise people can manipulate him. Right. The most interesting example, there's lots of, I'll stop there. Great book, recommend that one.
That's fine. Have you got any, Katie, any resources, newsletters, blogs that you think are useful for people to follow and watch along with or read?
I'd recommend two blogs for the same reason, that both Ellipsis's blog and Freemius's blog, and Freemius does videos as well, are about building WordPress businesses, so they touch on marketing. But the thing I like about both is there's a lot of data behind them, because both Freemius and Ellipsis work with multiple WordPress companies, and they both collate that data to share insights, which I think is very useful to other companies. So, for example, I think in the last year, Alex has written two articles about Black Friday in particular, based on an audit of how other WordPress companies have done their Black Friday marketing, so that you can then learn a lot for your own company about what's worked for other people. And Freemius does similar things, not so much about marketing, although they do touch on that, but things like free trials and whether they increase your sales and tons of stuff that's specific to WordPress.
Cool. We'll have a look at those. Thanks. Keith?
Yeah, just one last thing for me, I think, is that we talked about like first steps, like what's the first thing someone should do, or like the low-hanging fruit stuff. The first thing I think I'd recommend is to find out what positioning means. So there's a thing called positioning, and it is, Alex, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's pretty fundamental to everything you're going to do as part of your marketing. Is that right? Am I right with that?
Yeah, we were talking about product market fit earlier. Yeah, exactly. Positioning, product market fit, very closely related.
So yeah, find out what positioning is, and to do that, or maybe after you've done that, I would really recommend this. It's called Obviously Awesome.
I'm reading that at the moment.
Yeah, you've got that. Yeah, so it's Obviously Awesome by April Dunford. She's great. It's a really easy read, and it gives you kind of practical advice to come up with your own effective positioning statement and understand what all that actually means, and that kind of forms the basis of your marketing going forward. So yeah,
super important. We need some sort of book club recommendation system.
I think so. It sounds like it, right?
Some really good resources there, so hopefully that's helped people find some information that they might find useful. So we're done, really. That's 12 o'clock already. It's flown by again. So thank you so much again to Alex and Katie for joining us. Before we go, where can people find you on the web? Where should they go to follow you or read about you, Katie?
Our website is barn2, that's barn and the number 2.co.uk. So you can read about us there or follow us on Twitter or Facebook, which is all barn2 plugins.
Cool. And Alex?
So the Ellipsis website is getellipsis.com. If you want to see what we can do, that's on there. As Katie mentioned, our blog is also on there. A lot of the things we talked about today, a bunch more stuff in there. We're doing a monthly newsletter called Press Marketing, which is like our insider guide for stuff. We touch on a lot of topics which often surface later. I also run a weekly newsletter for WordPress professionals called Master WP, which is at masterwp.co, and people say it's good. So
good, excellent, thanks for that. So again, please do subscribe to the channel if you want to watch more of us talking about WordPress in WP Cafe. We've got some more episodes coming up soon. Thanks again so much to Katie and Alex for joining us. And thanks to you guys for tuning in on YouTube, and thanks for any questions that you've answered. Our next show is going to be in December. We're thinking about a Christmassy-based episode, but we're not too sure yet. We've also got a poll out on Twitter, if you go onto the High Rise Digital Twitter account, just to ask you guys, what do you want us to cover in the next episodes of WP Cafe? So please let us know on that poll. And if you want something covered that isn't in the options, then please just give us a comment and send us a message, and we'll see if we can get something lined up. So yeah, thanks for all that, and thanks for joining us again, and we will see you next month. Thanks very much.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.